Welcome to the Collaborative Business Podcast. My name is Peter Simons, and today I'm in conversation with Eric Moss. And with Eric, we talk about the Challenger Sale, the book and the methodology and the research behind the book. So you might wonder, what has a Challenger Sale to do with alliances? Well, let's welcome Eric to the conversation and find out. Eric, welcome. Welcome to the Collaborative Business Podcast. I was ready to say good afternoon, but I'm not sure if it's still afternoon on your side of the globe.
Actually, it's approaching noontime. Okay. I'm based in the San Francisco Bay Area, where it's a very, very unique part of the U.S. In some places in the U.S., if you don't like the weather where you are, wait 20 minutes, it'll change. Here in the San Francisco Bay Area, if you don't like the weather where you are, drive about 20 minutes and you can have your pick.
Okay. Well, that sounds good.
It's a fun place to live.
Yeah. I've been there a couple of times, and it's also a fun place to visit the San Francisco Bay Area.
Indeed.
Yes. So, Eric, as I said, welcome. But for our listeners and for our viewers as well, can you introduce yourself? Who is Eric Moss, and what do you do?
Sure. My name is Eric Moss, and I've been an alliance professional for, well over 15 years. With companies such as Accenture, Infosys, and most recently Cognizant. And over that time, managed a variety of relationships with technology partners, be they software partners, be they hardware and network equipment partners, even managed some of the business transformation platform or business process outsourcing platform partners as well. So experiences in both joint go-to-market partners, creating differentiated joint solutions, as well as platform partners and to some extent channel partners.
That's a pretty broad alliance experience.
Thank you.
Yes, it is. So it's great to have you in this conversation. I was triggered by your initial reaction because we spoke about having you as a guest in the conversation, I think shortly after I first read the book Challenger Sale. And you said, well, you didn't say I read it, but you said I would like to share and discuss the lessons about Challenger Sale. And I was intrigued in the sense that I read the book and I felt, well, this is it carries the title Sale, but I feel it's more about alliance professionals than about sales professionals. And there you are, you said, well, let's discuss that Challenger Sale book. So great to dive into not only the book but probably also the methodology. Before we do, can you introduce the Challenger Sale to the audience? Because I can imagine that there are people who have not yet read the book.
Certainly. First of all, it's a very, very easy read. You can get it out on Amazon.com, local library, what have you. But it is fundamentally written and directed towards the sales professional, towards B2B selling. And what it was published by the Corporate Executive Board, based upon some research that they had done, research via questionnaire, of approximately 20,000 or so sales professionals, B2B selling. So alliances were not even considered as part of the initial study. But what was interesting is that they went into the study with the intent of identifying what are the behaviors that differentiate successful people, salespeople, from those that are less than successful. The interesting thing that they had was they had a norm against which to measure. That is percent of quota attainment. So forget about whether or not the quota was right, wrong, or indifferent. They at least had a consistent norm across organizations, across different industries, different salespeople, different selling environments, all of those kinds of things. And out of that, from the data, they then did a bit of analysis, factor-based analysis, and extracted, I think it's what, five personas?
Yes.
Of that the salespeople themselves kind of clustered into. And they clustered into that based upon the behaviors that they exhibited, what they thought was important in terms of their success, and then also how they actually performed on the quota attainment criteria. And they went into it without any preconceived notions as to what the answer would be, although they suspected that one of the personas that they identified as the relationship manager would be the best performing, because we all know that sales is about relationships, right? No. And that's what was one of the surprise elements that came out of the study. And what really intrigued me about the study, because one of the things in my background is management science. And one of the principles of management science is that any model you create should have an element of surprise. Well, this did.
There you are, already early on in the book.
Correct.
Yeah.
And the element of surprise was that there was a persona type that they dubbed the challenger that far and away consistently outperformed the other persona types. And the challenger is one who it's not confrontational so much as bringing new insights, reframing the problem, and being of value to the person to whom they're selling. Be this the and I'm going to mix methodologies, okay? In the Miller-Hyman context, you have an economic buyer, a user buyer, a technical buyer, a coach, and maybe there's a couple of others that I haven't factored into this. But what they're saying is that you need to educate and reframe to align with the buyer's behavior needs. So, for example, the economic buyer, you want to reframe and coach on business value created rather than price or cost. Okay, to the technical buyer, you want to reframe such that it's not adherence to requirements, but reframe in terms of, are these the right requirements to get you to your business end? You know, those kinds of things. And to the user buyer, it's, oh yes, I've seen these kinds of buyer behaviors before. I understand the challenges that other organizations similar to yours have in acquiring these kinds of things. Here's how they often approach it, those kinds of things. So you're bringing new information, new value, and it's all about how we jointly create value. And when you think about this, and I always look at these things through the various lenses or personas that I'm taking on, which kind of comes from some of the acting background that I've got, but that's a separate issue. But looking at this then from an alliance manager's lens, I'm thinking to myself, gosh, that's what we as alliance managers do a lot in terms of reframing the problem, being of value to all of the folks that we interact with, whether it's our alliance counterpart, people in the alliance organization, people within our own organization. And I reflected back on some of the more successful alliance managers that I've known, and it occurs to me that, yeah, maybe they were challengers too. So there are lessons to be learned, I think, from the challenger sale that are readily applicable to our profession.
So, and what are those lessons in your perspective?
Well, specifically that, it, and again, not all alliances are created equal.
Nope,
so, for example, a technical alliance is going to be different than a go-to-market alliance, okay? A biopharma alliance is significantly different than a non-biopharma alliance. And why people enter into alliance relationship or even a partner relationship or even a channel partner relationship is going to be different, okay? And so therefore, the personas that are going to be successful in those contexts are also going to be different.
Yes.
So, and as we know as alliance professionals, that alignment is critically important. So are you as the alliance manager aligned behaviorally with the kind of alliance that you're managing? Is your organization aligned with the persona that the alliance needs to have in order to be successful? So, for example, executive sponsors will look upon a go-to-market alliance in terms of what leads can my alliance partner bring me. Well, okay. We've got some misalignment here.
Yes.
So you can use the Challenger framework to really kind of objectively take the lessons there that are learned and apply them to your particular alliance. And you can also use the assessment tool that they have or frameworks that they have to do assessment on either your alliance partner or your internal alliances that you're forming or your executive sponsor. And in the extreme case, when you are in a channel partner kind of relationship, which is intended as a force multiplier in terms of sales, is am I dealing with a portfolio of channel partners that are they more challenger-like or less challenger-like? Because the objective of a channel partner is generate net new incremental revenue for both firms. So if the challenger sale applies to the individual, it also applies to the organization.
Yes, I agree. Yeah.
So if the premise of the challenger sale is if we can increase the mix of challengers from the other personas that we have in our sales force, then in a channel partner kind of context, if we shift the mix of channel partners who are challengers from those that are not, therefore, just by doing nothing else, the incremental revenue should increase.
Have you already had an opportunity to test this on in an alliance environment?
Thank you for asking. The direct answer is no. Because I'm currently acting as an independent consultant rather than an active alliance manager.
Yeah.
But were I an active alliance manager, yes, I would be. I have shared this premise with firms that have channel partners, etc. Let's say that there is intrigue, but not yet uptake. And I think that's a reflection of the overall maturity of where the partner programs and alliance programs kind of are.
Because you feel that they're not mature enough yet?
Well, I think that some folks or the folks at least that I've been talking to don't quite yet see as strong a parallel between the persona of the use of Challenger in a direct B2B sales environment as opposed to the use of Challenger in a partner and alliance type construct.
Mm-hmm. But from that perspective, is a partner and alliance environment not just another B2B environment? Maybe I'm exaggerating a bit, but...
Perhaps. You know, yeah. All I can do at this point in time is observe the phenomena. Don't yet know the root cause. But you know, it is also to continue to forge ahead on the hypothesis that yeah, there's something there. I believe that there is. I'd love to be able to prove it, but I'm also objective enough to say. Logically, it makes sense. In practice, it may not. But I'm the kind of person that says, why not?
Yeah. So when you look at it from that perspective, and you're an independent consultant, how would you describe your ideal client to test a challenger sale on an alliance situation?
I would start with a channel partner type of construct first, because the alignment between a change in revenue generated through the partner ecosystem is going to be more recognizable more immediately than in a specific go-to-market one-on-one type of alliance. Mm-hmm. So you benefit from the large numbers. You benefit, I think, from a closer leap of faith between a salesperson and channel as a sales organization. So it's a question of, are we talking about a single entity person or a single entity, a channel partner, and then the collection of partners?
Yeah.
And I think it would be relatively straightforward in that kind of context because the framework for assessment already exists. Pardon me. CEB has done that work.
Yes.
It just hasn't been applied in a partner type of setting.
And then how would you measure the success when if it works or not? Is that again based on achievement of the quota of the channel alliance managers, or is it a different methodology?
I would say it's attainment of quota of the alliance partners, because each of the channel partners has their revenue goals, revenue targets, mm-hmm. that the mothership, if you will, the product entity has set for each of the channel partners. You either have tiers of channel partners, or you have you have MDF programs that are aligned to various revenue targets, et cetera, et cetera. So you do have the outcome function, which is target attainment. Same outcome function as was used in the original research.
Yes. Now, when I read the book, and in my work, I've worked more with product type of alliances, where two companies come together to create a new product where they need each other's knowledge. So not necessarily channel type of alliances. And from that background, I read the book and I noticed that the behavior of the challenger sale, the challenger profile, was very much a collaborative behavior. So yes, I am challenging the other side because I feel that they can do it better. I'm educating them on how they can do it better. But in the end, we collaborate to come to a result, and a result that is better than we otherwise could have achieved alone. So from that perspective, I looked at the challenger sale, and I was happily surprised that the challenger profile was more successful than the relationship profile.
Now, that you bring up a very interesting point, Peter. That is that if I believe, as the alliance manager, that for us to be successful, our alliance fundamentally must be challenger-like, mm-hmm. and I believe and I've assessed myself and I exhibit strong challenger behaviors, but my alliance counterpart is coming from a relationship or a problem-solver paradigm or persona, we, between us, have a misalignment that needs to be addressed.
Yes.
And so that's in the kind of context that you had described, how the challenger sale, the principles could be applied. But, you know, the leap between the application and the outcome, the result of the application of that framework, is a little bit more tenuous. So that's why I was suggesting starting with a channel partner type of ecosystem.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely correct. It's eminently applicable.
Okay. Interesting. Interesting stuff to even dive deeper in and see if we can apply it with our customers, with our clients. Now, when you look back to your own experience with alliances over the years, what lesson would you like to share that you would bring forward to current days, and also combining that possibly with the challenger sale?
It's exactly along the lines that we were just talking about, Peter, in the sense that now you have, if you look at things through a challenger lens in terms of the behavior types, it's okay to, number one, understand what your persona is, and also to understand the paradigm and the personas of the people around you, mm-hmm. be it your executive sponsor, be it the partnering organization, because each of them have a different culture. And again, if you've got companies that are 90 degrees out of phase with each other, one wants to be all about relationships and the other wants to be about all problem solving, again, you've got and you believe it needs to be X and Y, you at least have some direction in terms of what behaviors do you need to shift around.
Yes.
So you know, that's certainly a lesson learned. You know, if I've got a counterpart, either an executive sponsor or a counterpart, that I can now have a framework for assessing what is it that I'm seeing. Now I also have a roadmap of what could or should I be doing about it, if it is within my capability to do.
When you look at this alignment and you bring it forward from your past, you see it in the Challenger sale. Was there a specific lesson that you learned when you started to work on that alignment, or was it already natural in your behavior?
Well, you know, in looking at how my how I have personally grown as an alliance manager, I came into the relationship thinking that came into the profession thinking that relationship management is what's important. Mm-hmm. So keeping everybody happy, you know, those kinds of things, making sure that folks are having cappuccino together and that kind of, it was what was important.
Recognizable.
And with time and hopefully with increased maturity, at least for the kinds of things that where I've been able to have demonstrable results, I've changed and changed into what I now recognize from that paradigm as into more of a challenger mode. Now the good news is that that if one is in a particular persona or persona type, this doesn't mean that you can't move from persona A to persona B. Having said that, it's also very much like how many psychologists does it take to change a light bulb? And the answer is it doesn't matter unless the light bulb first wants to change. So if some if you are locked in the mold of it's all about relationships, I'm going to be a relationship manager, or you just have a personality where you like being the lone wolf, if that's what you like doing, recognize what the different personas around you. But you know, I think it's a lesson kind of after the fact, and it's that kind of framework that really has kind of helped me identify. I was this way, I evolved this way, and so on and so forth, which kind of moved me through the various personas of the challenger, and they were very recognizable to me.
Yeah, it's sometimes good to look back and to learn from the past, so that you can bring it forward.
You got two choices. Either those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it.
Yeah.
The definition of insanity, which is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different outcome. And that's Einstein's definition, not mine.
That's it. I recognize that one, yeah. Einstein. Okay. Well, when people are entering into an alliance for the first time, what would be your number one recommendation to them?
An alliance, okay. I would recommend that they get out of their own skin and ask, what's in it for the partner?
Yeah.
Why are we doing this? How is it that we're going to create greater benefit together than either of us could do apart? That's one. Number two is, what's going to be differentiated about this alliance than alliances we have with other companies who are similar, or that our alliance partner has with other companies who are similar to us? Mm-hmm. Because if you can't differentiate, I mean, that's essential to kind of business strategy. If you're a commodity, expect to be treated that way. If you are entering into an alliance, challenge, is it a commodity alliance or a differentiated alliance? Why are you doing it? And that's going to guide a lot of other things that you decide.
So you're really describing, do your homework and build the foundation before you even start, and don't start into an alliance because you like each other.
Well, And by the way, liking each other is not necessarily a requirement.
No, I agree.
For entering into an alliance. But certainly, you know, we as alliance managers, we pour our heart and soul into these alliances. I mean, it is all blood, sweat, and tears. There's no question. So go into it with your eyes open. Know what it is that you're getting yourself into. Know why you're doing it. And make sure and continuously test, is this vision of reality consistent with the vision of reality of everybody else that's involved with this alliance? Things are going to change. That's the nature of the beast.
And that's one certainty that you will have before you start even. Yes.
Exactly. But you need to understand the indicators that change is upon you and how are you going to navigate it or know what you're getting into. So the well begun is half done.
Agree. So is there a specific book that you would like to recommend beyond or besides the Challenge Yourself book to our audience?
Oh my gosh, in terms of the alliance management professional or just in general?
Well, I leave that up to you.
Okay. Because again, I have a background in management science, I tend to approach things from an engineering perspective, which is why I spoke of earlier Miller-Hyman. Miller-Hyman takes an engineering-like approach to B2B selling. And many of our alliances are B2B kinds of arrangements, which means that you've got multiple people who need to say yes, which means that there are multiple personality types out there. Knowing those personality types and being able to identify, have I uncovered who the economic buyer is, for example? And there are lots of people who will pretend that they are. So, you know, those kinds of books are very, very good for at least providing a framework. Otherwise, you're just kind of flying by the seat of your pants. Now, there's nothing wrong with that if you're a good seat of the pants flyer. I'm not. And a framework or a point of reference I find helpful to me. So Miller-Hyman is one. The Challenger Sale is another. There's nothing wrong in the old blocking and tackling of Secrets of Closing the Sale. And I'm trying to remember who the author was. It's he was almost a door-to-door salesman.
I will include it in show notes.
Yeah. So, you know, there's nothing wrong with being a student of selling and B2B selling. And if it doesn't resonate with you, at least know that and reject it. It's okay. The Power of Two. Is one of the best books I've read on alliances.
The Power of Two, okay.
And that's John Conlon. And I had the good fortune of working for John, and working with John when he was Accenture and for John when he was at Infosys.
Okay. I will include a link to all of the books in the show notes so that people can easily find it and connect it. Talking about connecting, where can people connect with you?
There are several ways that they can do that, certainly through LinkedIn. I think that one of the things that brought us together was a post that I had written in LinkedIn about the Challenger Sale applied to partners.
Yes.
So, you know, I tend to publish out there. Feel free to read these musings. I would encourage folks to comment on them or like them or not. And if so, you know, again, that's one way to interact. And probably the easiest way overall, given our social media type of environment, email address is em.and.associates@comcast.net.
Okay, we'll include a link there to make
very
it easy.
Fine.
Well, Eric, thank you very much for being my guest today. My final question, is there anything you would like to share that we haven't discussed yet?
That is an open door kind of question.
Yes.
And allows us to pick up at a later time.
That's true as well. Okay.
So, it's been a delight. Peter, thank you so much for reaching out to me. I've really enjoyed a lot of the things that you have published in the LinkedIn group and all of the work that you're doing for our profession. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Eric. Thanks for being my guest today. So far for my conversation with Eric Moss about the Challenger Sale and Strategic Alliances. As usual, you can find the details in the show notes over at petersimons.com. That's it for this time. Thanks for tuning in. Until next time.